I often say that addiction is the result of not knowing how to find safety inside of yourself. So you find it in something else, and understandably, you get hooked on it because you're desperate for safety. That's all you're guilty of. Any of you looking to learn more about supporting addiction recovery through a trauma-informed and somatic lens and a nutritional lens, please join me for my addiction circle. This is a bi-monthly, entirely free virtual circle that I invite anyone here to come and join if they want more information. Addiction tends to be so steeped in shame, and I find that doing this work in a community of people helps to destigmatize that shame so you can see how not alone you are in the experience. So whether you are personally withdrawing, preventing, experiencing relapse, or you work with people who are actively addicted or in recovery, all are welcome.
The next Addiction Circle will be held on Tuesday, May 7th at 5 p.m. EDT. This meeting is not recorded for the sake of anonymity. No registration is necessary. Just join through the link below.
We're recreating some relational dynamic, which the large majority of us have had as adults now in childhood, that is, where we did have the experience of an unmet need. Right, where we did not have the level of attunement or even maybe physical presence of a caretaker that we wanted and that we needed. Though because the familiarity of those habits and patterns have over time given us a sense of predictability and given our nervous system a sense of safety, we'll continue to repeat those patterns or to be at a dinner table with someone who doesn't look at us in the eye because it's what's comfortable. Because it's what's familiar, because it's what's predictable.
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast, where we explore life through the lens of somatics. I'm Luis Mujica, a somatic educator who teaches people how to find safety in themselves. Your turn to learn begins now. So I'm here with Dr. Nicole LaPera, the holistic psychologist. It's so far out. To know that I'm talking to you and not just a video of you on the screen. So thank you for making the time and how busy you are.
Oh, I'm honored to be here, Luis. Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this conversation for some time now.
First of all, I love the title of the book, How to Be the Love You Seek. I think it was a decade ago I discovered this book. You know the work of Byron Katie?
Yes.
There was a book from her called I Need Your Love, Is It True? And it completely broke, you know, my brain open in a really beautiful way. And your book goes down similar alleyways, which I really loved. And so I guess I just want to first say, what did you write this to free parts of yourself? Did you write this in response to what people were asking for? What was the impetus?
I think, as is the case with really all of the work that I ever put out, it is predominantly informed by my own journey, which just so happens, I think, to really be emblematic of, I think, the universal journey, which a lot of us experience in terms of if and when we go through an awakening, right? We come to awarenesses, many of us discover all of these layers of conditioning. Of course, I talk a lot about that kind of foundational journey and how to do the work. And I think then naturally what happens is we continue to see so many of the dysfunctional cycles still present in our relationships. And having had that similar experience myself, continuing to, you know, really feel disconnected in certain ways, really to struggle in certain ways, and having played or practiced for a long amount of time actually as a couples therapist, and very similar to how I felt when I was working with individual clients, it seemed to me that no matter how much communication, insight, and awareness that I was able to facilitate couples or even families to have inside the treatment room, it didn't seem to translate to action. Cycles still continued. So for me, it was more or less, I think of this book as an extension of the conversation. Because we are all so intrinsically wired to be in relationship, I think it's only inevitable where we begin to see, again, these cycles within our relationships that we then want to change.
I think what I love how you open the book with this kind of case study of these two people. Dominic, was that the name, I think?
And I think it was excellent because it really speaks to the somatics of relational patterns, of how, just like you said, the mind can know this, the strategy can be given, yet the body is so used to something that it finds maybe not even comforting, but familiar. It's like it knows it, so it repeats it. I guess I want you to break it down for me and those listening. How do you get to the body when it comes to interrupting a pattern in a relationship versus the people listening that say, well, I know all this, but I still do it? Tell me that piece.
I think the first piece is having the awareness that the body is playing a foundational role. Because without that, I think many of us have lived the experience of frustration, maybe even feeling a bit shameful and broken when we can't translate our insight or awareness into action. I think it's really natural, right? And especially when we're applying this conversation to relationships, if and when we've had relationship after relationship that didn't serve us, maybe that was outright dysfunctional. Maybe we even have a great supportive friend system who's yelling from the sidelines, right? That we're continuing to repeat these patterns. I think a lot of us do end up entertaining this idea that maybe a fulfilling relationship isn't meant for me, until we understand that the reason why so many of us are stuck is in the somatic or in the body experience. So of course, though, having that awareness doesn't shift us into action. I think the most foundational piece of the journey is first becoming connected to the body. And I say this because a lot of us live in the mental realm, sometimes even thinking that we are being insightful, right? We're self-analyzing and kind of hanging our hat on the mind and giving all of the power to the mind. And I think we do that a lot of times out of protection. And I know for me, I'd lived the majority of decades of my life even completely consistently disconnected from my body. So rebuilding that foundational connection through daily practices of reconnection, making sure that we're tending to our body, our nervous system in particular, through nutrition, through movement, through rest, through breathing, through nervous system regulation, right? Then, of course, I think gives us the opportunity in the moments where we really need it, where we're becoming, you know, reactive subconsciously, to be able to create the change that we want.
Yeah, I feel this tenderness in my heart when you were saying about the story of relationships aren't for me, or I don't deserve this, or I can't have this. And then when you were saying about going to the mind as a protective mechanism, I always call that an internal flight response, where you're fleeing from sensation for, you know, the mental realm. And that was my tactic up until maybe even 2 years ago. Relationally, it was my tactic of saying, well, I'm not meant for this kind of relationship. And what it really meant was I didn't trust this kind of relationship, or I didn't have capacity for it. And so I'm kind of flipping it back to you now, because you've been incredibly transparent in all your relationship experiences, or maybe not all, but recent ones. What was your personal journey of learning the difference between I'm not meant for this and, oh, I don't have the capacity, I don't know how I'm going to tend to that capacity to eventually get to that tender, vulnerable place of connecting in a new way?
The first really huge shift happened for me when I located myself as a co-creator of my relationships.
Yes.
Because I think predominantly what we do when we are feeling dissatisfied in relationships, it's a natural instinct to immediately point the finger externally, right? Mm-hmm. You're causing this feeling. You're not, you know, connected to me in the way that I need. You're the problem, or I picked the wrong person, and onwards to the right person I go. And I followed that same pattern, relationship after relationship, for me, ending up feeling, or typically feeling, emotionally disconnected. Somewhere down the line, I would start to voice that as the issue I was having with the relationship, assuming, of course, that it was some, you know, factor or lacking or limitation of the person that I was picking, trying to, before long, the relationship would end, and onward I would go to find another relationship, only to find myself back in that pattern. Mm-hmm. So it took me kind of beginning to see, okay, why is this such a common theme in my life? Why am I in relationships, yet at the same time, feeling so disconnected from them? And for me, exploring then how disconnected I was myself, mm-hmm, allowed me to kind of make that distinction. And of course, it didn't then immediately translate to nuance and discretion and feeling, mm-hmm, my way, but it gave me at least the tools and the language to explore dynamics within relationships in a new way, this time now factoring myself in. If I'm expecting others to meet me emotionally, to know me emotionally, then that's built on the assumption that I know me emotionally. And the reality of all that for me personally was that I didn't. So before I could even determine, is this the right relationship or not, I had to start to factor myself and my emotions into any type of relationship before I was able to get a sense of how attuned that we could be, how intimate we could be, or connected in terms of emotions. But that foundational piece, and the reason why I'm emphasizing that, held so much of the answers for me and why I so consistently felt so disconnected emotionally in particular.
I think it's really powerful. It's one of the things I wanted to explore with you was the co-creator piece. I am a part of this. And on its face, or on the surface of that, it's really easy to defend a statement like that by saying that's victim blaming. And I couldn't see it further from that. I'm just throwing it out there because I think when that comes up in our minds of, well, that's not fair, he really does suck, you know, that's not fair, they're really not looking me in the eyes at the breakfast table. It's like, oh yeah, that might be true. Yet what in me is moved to sitting at a breakfast table with someone that doesn't look me in the eyes for 20 years? And so I get curious about that. What did you find in yourself, and what did you find in your clients around what moves us to these dissatisfying relationships, and then we focus on the other?
Yeah, I appreciate you making that distinction, because I do think it can be heard as, and the reality of it is, someone is doing or not doing something that's activating this deeper part of us. So what is that deeper part of us, to answer your question? In my opinion, our unmet needs, or suppressed, repressed emotions or aspects of our individual self-expression, right? That is typically what keeps us pursuing and engaged in relationships that don't serve us. Mm. Not having any other option or any other way or any other resources or even any awareness that those unmet needs and those suppressed emotions and aspects of our being are what is driving us. And of course, what I'm referencing is all of these conditioned ways where suppression happens, where unmet needs occur, or even how we learn to meet our needs. All of that happened in our earliest relational and environmental context. So essentially what we're doing is we're recreating some relational dynamic, which the large majority of us have had as adults now in childhood, that is, where we did have the experience of an unmet need. Right, where we did not have the level of attunement or even maybe physical presence of a caretaker that we wanted and that we needed. Though, because the familiarity of those habits and patterns have over time given us a sense of predictability and given our nervous system a sense of safety, we'll continue to repeat those patterns or to be at a dinner table with someone who doesn't look at us in the eye, because it's what's comfortable, because it's what's familiar, because it's what's predictable. Yet until we understand that it is the unmet needs or the suppressed emotions, or simply what's going on beneath the surface, we'll continue to repeat those patterns, sometimes exhaustedly, all of the while continuing to have that need gone unmet.
Yeah, I've always said that trauma does not like the unpredictable. You know, even if it hurts, even if it's painful, even if you feel alone, if the nervous system knows this dynamic, that's the one it's going to go with. Because there, like you said, a sense of safety, it's not actual settling into yourself. It's almost like a sensation of it that's so temporary, it becomes addictive because it doesn't take root. And so I get curious about when you start noticing that, like you said, your kind of big moment in this was saying, I'm a co-creator. So, okay, what unmet needs am I expecting another person with their own unmet needs in their own life to meet? When I start meeting them in myself and even outside of this person, I guess two things happen for me, and I'd love your input on this. One thing is I lose the charge of trying to get my need met from them. So like that kind of like addictive co-dysregulating trauma bond thing that happens, it's no longer thrilling. It's kind of like, oh, it's boring now, because now, you know, the need is met. And when I meet my need myself, or I feel a security, I just love them for who they are in that moment. I'm not projecting what I need or don't need. I just love their presence. Do you have that experience? Tell me where that goes for you.
Yeah, I mean, I could not agree more. And I think sometimes kind of the charge that we're subconsciously seeking to get, right, that we're calling, you know, comfort, predictability, familiarity in that moment, or that's essentially what it is in that moment, right? For the other person, how they're experiencing it. And I think this is why it creates cycles of sometimes conflict, sometimes disconnection, mm-hmm. sometimes invalidation in the relationship, is the other person feels it too. Mm. What they feel, in my opinion, is like a desperation, a pulling, a needing, mm-hmm. whether it's sometimes directly where we're very clear in what we need them to change or do differently. And sometimes it's just the energetics that they're experiencing. And so then that leads into this idea of what I believe is or my hope is the unlearning that we could do and the relearning in terms of relational space and what even love is, mm-hmm. right? Love is, in my opinion, the safety and the security, the presence to be able to be with someone exactly as they are.
Mm, absolutely.
And that's, I think, what creates. So when we lose the charge, right, when we lose the direct or indirect demanding or controlling, then I think we allow that space to naturally be. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't moments still of discomfort mm-hmm. in that presence, right? Yeah. I think sometimes we immediately think, oh, well, everything should just be peaceful and fine then. We're not going to be present to anything difficult. But that's not true. We're just going to be in that pure state of presence to whatever is available. And I think that then creates the relational space where true trust, true safety, true security, and what I would call true love, if you will, mm-hmm. not to sound cliche, yeah, totally. But where that then energetically exists, because it exists in that presence. And then the emotional attunement or entrainment that can happen when we're talking about empathy, right? And kind mm-hmm. of vibrating together. And that's that bond that I think many of us are looking for when we're even giving those directives to someone else.
Absolutely. I think when you said desperation, I really felt that one and wanted to highlight that mm-hmm. because how often is desperation confused of for love? And I think I get curious about that. When you say love for you is this safety and security that I can love you as you are. Again, the mind of people looking to argue that might be, well, I'm not going to love someone who's abusive. And it's like, and this is where my mind goes, if someone's abusive or someone's hurting me or something isn't working, in that moment, that's who they are in that moment. So if I'm loving them for who they are, I even get the instructions to leave them, don't I? And so true love isn't about no boundaries. True love is about I'm with what is, right? So can you just go into that bit with me?
I really love that kind of distinction that you're making, because a lot of us do assume that love means undying loyalty, showing up, not changing the dynamic in any direction, right? Just accepting means allowing. And accepting does not mean allowing. It means, to some extent, allowing the person to be as they are, but it doesn't mean allowing the dynamic to be as it is, right? So love and loving from afar, and especially, you know, circumstances I think that many of us have, or relationships that many of us have to heal from or get the opportunity to heal from, sometimes circumstances are so that we don't and can't, and it's not safe for us to remain in those connections. But it doesn't mean that we can't feel compassionate toward or accepting of someone as they are. So it's so important, I think, to separate, you know, what we really mean when we say accept, and allowing the possibility that we can accept and still have protection or a limit in place in terms of what we will engage with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love how you write about this a lot. You wrote it in your book and you write it on Instagram a lot about what if falling for someone wasn't about being dysregulated. You know, like we see someone and our blood pressure rises, we mm-hmm. feel kind of crazy, we lose ourselves in them. And there's this kind of old poetic way of this is what love at first sight means. But I think what we're learning is this is what a trauma response at first sight means. And so I just wonder if we could play with that a little bit. Like maybe you could tell me through your own body lens or through someone else's that you've worked with, what's it like to make the shift? Like, what does it feel like? That's what I want to hear. What does it feel like to make the shift from, wow, I'm so revved up and lost myself with you, compared to I'm so secure in myself and I connect to you from that security? What does that feel like in your bones? What's the difference?
I think the security and safety sometimes confuses us, because it is to some extent the absence of that heightened exhilaration, right? Even when we think of peace, calm, right? It's a grounded energy, right? It's not a frenetic energy, like I think sometimes we even label as passion, right? That is what we think is attraction and passion and is, you know, worthy of pursuing. And in reality, safe and secure love feels like a grounded presence. We feel at ease. We feel able to be connected to our truest self, you know, our perspectives, our authentic emotions, our deepest desires and our wants. We feel able to share them without fear of rejection or abandonment, saying or doing the wrong thing, which might translate to the person not, you know, wanting to be in relation with us. So in comparison to this very heightened energetic state, peace and calm love is a more grounded state of presence in our body, which is confusing, back to that point, because some of us will label that if our primary state of energetic being is heightened, is stress. I share often about the mantra in my family. We used to walk around saying on repeat, always something. And that was referencing the near constant amount of stress, right? So primed for stress, feeling familiar with stress, almost feeling connected through the stressful experience within this trauma bonded relationships. In absence of that, I would find myself using that same language, right? Well, maybe I'm not attracted to this person. Maybe there's nothing there. Where's the spark? Only to realize, and I'll just share an aside, because I was talking about this recently, as I started to embody that and teach myself that this heightened, elevated state was not love, was not passion, was actually a trauma stress response. As I started to do the somatic work to regulate my nervous system, to bring myself into that calm, grounded state of presence so I could co-create and do my part in bringing that into my relationships, because I only had the contrast of that heightened state of energy, how I would narrate these lower moments, for lack of a better word, the calm moments in my mind. Sometimes I would recite it aloud to whoever was in earshot. In absence of heightened emotion or stress for me, for a very long time, I would walk around and label that peaceful, energetic, grounded state as tired. I immediately thought that in absence of that stimulating energy, well, I must need a nap. And I started to now even be able to lean into that distinction that, no, this is what peace in my body feels like. This is what it feels like to be in absence of activating energy of stress. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm tired, right? So now I can kind of I'm learning how to make that distinction between, oh, am I just at peace and at rest and satisfied in this moment? Or am I actually sleepy? And do I, but my mind immediately went to, well, I must need a nap because I'm not stimulated to this extreme degree. Because I had spent the large majority of my life stimulated with overwhelming stress and under-resourced in terms of my nervous system.
That's such a, I love how you laid the whole piece out, because a big part of the work I do with trauma is with nutrition. And you had brought that up earlier, nutrition, and really teaching people how to nurture their adrenals versus stimulate them when they're trying to heal from PTSD. And the number one complaint that I'll get is how bored they feel. And this is what you're talking about with tired, you know, but peace, calm, ground, the body being at this kind of balanced place where it's not being activated or stimulated feels boring or tired in comparison, or even depressed, right? And I love that, because activation, really, you feel really alive. That's why people love runner's high. That's why people snort cocaine. It's like, we love that feeling, being alive. And this is the addictive cycles of relationships, isn't it? If this person irritates me to the point of activating my adrenals, I feel a sense of aliveness, and I'm calling that passion and love and romance, when really my system is being activated and dysregulated. And I'm just laughing very hard internally. I was trying to keep my composure so I could listen. When you were saying always something, that was my family's mantra. And I remember it so clearly. Always something, always something. And we were all just kind of like co-dysregulating together in that mantra. Because to actually say, oh, what a beautiful day, it was like terrifying. You know, the stillness and peace and openness that created, there wasn't an environment for that. So I think you're also pointing to something that I really understand, is that physiology of the posture my body takes with another body when there's co-dysregulation and when there's co-regulation. And the latter, the co-regulation, is an open, soft, defenseless posture. But if you grew up in a family system like yours where the posture is constricted and activated, that becomes your overcoupling for how to relate with people, right? Right. So like, would you say right now in your relationships, do you have more relationships than not that co-regulate you? How do you experience your current bodies that you relate to?
The one piece I just want to add before I get to that, because we complicate things. It doesn't even have to be, right? We need the stimulation from outside. We can self-generate the heightened stimulation. So, because I would notice this pattern in myself, in absence of even anything happening, no one agitating me at all, no one even being around, with all of that stress and trauma in my own body, it was only a matter of time before my thoughts began to reflect that agitation, racing, stressful, upsetting, always something based. And then, right, if I sat in that percolator of agitation long enough, it was only a matter of time before I myself agitated circumstances, picked up and fired off a text, or, you know, brought up a conversation that's already said and done, because now that I decided I don't like what was said.
Yeah.
And before I know it, right, that's just another way that I was co-creating, even in absence of anything seemingly happening. So I'm bringing that point up and segue into you asking me in terms of, because so much of how I experience my current relationships is still a co-creation of how regulated I am in my body. So while I, you know, do and have access now toward individuals who, similar to myself, are on their own journey of healing, there are still dysregulating moments in my relationships, whether it's because, even as we kind of got introduced and were talking before this, I was acknowledging that I'm on the tail end now of almost a 6-month book promotion period. On top of the fact that putting out a book is incredibly vulnerable in and of itself, having spent the past 2 years even writing the book now, right? So energetically, I am under-resourced from all of the expenditure of energy, which means in those moments for me, especially as the to-do list piles up, all these exciting opportunities that I've had access to promote my book, the first thing out the window for me is my foundational connection to my body. The first thing I don't do in the mornings is the habits I need to stay grounded in my body. I dive right in to my to-do list. So before long, all of this dysregulation, doesn't matter how safe and secure the person that I'm in a relationship with is showing up, I'm so dysregulated. I'm so reactive. That just like I described in that, you know, utopian peaceful day, I'm now the one creating the dysregulation in my relationships, regardless of what the person is doing or not doing in relation to me.
Hey, my friends. I created a space that is affordable, accessible, and anyone is allowed to join anytime, and it's called the Library Membership. The Library Membership is an online private platform that hosts dozens of my webinars, my somatic practices, private mini lectures, and movement practices. There's also a monthly sound healing, and you'll be invited to a weekly Tuesday live mini practice with me and other participants. You'll also be invited to be a live audience member in our monthly HLN team podcast recordings, where you'll take place in the Q&A that happens off air after the episode is filmed. For more information on this membership, click on the link below or go to holisticlifenavigation.com and click on membership and then library. You can join right now and you can cancel or pause your subscription at any time. I look forward to seeing you in there.
Which is quite empowering, you know? It's so, and that's the beauty of how to be the love you seek. It's so empowering because instead of this, even this, and I say this word, I don't know how people feel about it, entitlement. You know, if I have a partner and there's this entitled, inherited idea I have, like she or he or this person should make my body feel good when I'm dysregulated, I just don't believe for myself that's the kind of relationships I want to create or even be expected to create for other people. Whereas this piece you're bringing in really lights me up, which is, oh, can I notice what body I'm bringing to other people? Because you can go into a room of people that are really calm and happy and full of love. And if you are so activated and dysregulated and you can't even relate to them, the co-dysregulation happens like that. And so I guess I say that because you've also talked a lot about your unconventional throuple or your relationships you've been in. How, I'm so curious, how has that questioned or challenged these concepts of ownership that I find really enter a lot of monogamous, especially, but even polyamorous relationships where I own this person's resources. They should make me happy. They should sexually please me. They should, you know, fill in the blank. Tell me where that lands for you.
Again, these are interconnected in my mind. So speaking really quickly to the entitlement piece.
Yeah.
In childhood, we, in that state of dependency, reliant on another individual, another nervous system to quite literally physically care for us, you know, regulate our energetic system. That's a natural state of being, right? Mm-hmm. To feel entitled to that level of care because we are totally in need of that level of care. And the reason why I'm emphasizing this is we carry a remnant of that, what I'm going to call immature, based solely in a earlier developmental period mentality, if and when we haven't learned, as the large majority of us haven't learned, how to take ownership in childhood of our own needs. Mm-hmm. Because that's what childhood is about. It's, in my opinion, really simply, as I often do, I simplify things. Childhood is a time where we're growing, we're developing, we're discovering who we are, and in the process, discovering how to care and how to show up as who we are, to care for ourselves. And we learn that in these earliest relationships. So it's almost like a baton passing, right? Where we are in care, or we are being cared for by someone else. And depending on the dynamic and the availability of that care, over time, the goal would be is we take ownership and take responsibility to identify and to meet our needs. Mm-hmm. And if and when that didn't happen, as a large majority of us, it did not happen, we then tend to hang on to this idea of, or this belief in entitlement. You still need to continue to show up regardless of what's going on in your life. For some of us to care for me physically, to take care of me, to provide, for others to care for me emotionally. And I think with that comes this sense of ownership. Right. You are the one I need then, because you are the only one that can care for me. And if I'm giving all of my power away, I'm left powerless.
So wait, that you're the only one. How did your shift in relationship dynamics come from, okay, there's this one person I put it all on and now it's scattered?
Yes. And so I had been, up until this current relationship, of the monogamous mindset, monogamous relational, you know, experiences where I did have this idea that there was this one person that I was searching for, and similar to as I've been describing, was totally reliant on that person for meeting my needs. And as I started to heal and become aware, my belief in terms of not necessarily the structure of my relationship wasn't changing, though I was expanding kind of my focus and developing all of my relationships to simply be more authentic. And what naturally happened is I started to see nuance across relationships, meaning I started to see that, you know, not everyone made me feel the same way. I didn't connect with all of my friends or all my relationships in exactly the same manner. And there was incredible value I was starting to realize in removing kind of these categorical ideas of what a relationship's supposed to be, and instead just focusing on building a presence with the unique individual that was in front of me. So as I started to kind of break down just my idea and embody a new being in a relationship, as there started to be, you know, interest and attraction and a dynamic between now myself and my long-term committed partner, Lolly, and a third person, Jenna, who entered the picture, I think about 4 years ago, the three of us met and started working together and living and co-creating just generally together in life, which allowed us to not only see all the ways that we connected and complemented each other, and then attraction from that grew. And so by that point, I was open to the possibility, though I would be lying if I said there wasn't still all of that conditioning that worried, right? That worried about the impact of being honest to myself and then to these two people about how I was feeling, what impact that would have on my current partner, on the future of our partnership. And so really, it's just been leaning into really the authentic truth, which was that I was starting to see, you know, expanded possibilities in relationship. And I knew that Lolly and I, because we joined together very much as a trauma bond and kind of separately and together continue to evolve into a more authentic partnership. And the one thing her and I were always committed to for ourselves and then providing that gift to each other was the support to be and have space for whatever made each of us happy. And so kind of grounded in that, open to, you know, hearing and accepting that Lolly was feeling very similar to I in terms of the attraction, in terms of the interest, and in terms of exploring the possibility of what an expanded relationship could look like, we explored it. And I'm using this all very intentionally because there was a lot of unknown. There was a lot of fear. I had never even heard the word thruple, if I'm perfectly being honest, before I Googled it that day, as I think many of us do, to find validation, to make sure that someone else was doing it so that I could go ahead and do it myself, right? And so all of this, and even the way I'm describing it now and hearing myself describe it, it was just also tentative and unsure and uncertain. And in many ways, the three of us are still learning how to operate in this dynamic, because now the reality of it is I do have two uniquely different humans in which I have different dynamics with each. And then we have dynamics between the three of us. And so there's just a lot within the relationship.
And what I'm also hearing, and I could be imagining this, but I'm hearing that you were exploring this relationship and still are from a secure self relationship. And I imagine had you dove into this a decade or 20 years ago, it would be like a nightmare, right?
Oh,
like,
my God.
Tell me about that.
I mean, I don't even think, at least I would have dove into it.
You wouldn't even
I mean,
it,
to hear from someone that I cared about that there was interest in someone else, I mean, that would have been enough to activate the insecurity for me to, you know, worry, not even allowing my conscious awareness, my interest, because what would that then mean? Oh, that mean I picked the wrong person, right? With this idea that love is mutually exclusive, that there's not enough to go around, that I can't have a secure base here in love because now I have interest over here. And some of us do that with attraction, right? Oh, there's, I can only be attracted to one person. So everything would have convinced me out of a decade ago. Even probably allowing myself to be like, yeah, I'm interested in doing this. I probably would have kept it so repressed that I wouldn't even have had this as a conversation.
There's so much you're saying that I just like want to dive into. And so one thing you said really quickly that was so important to me was, and this is how I heard it, you know, you're at this place where you're really practicing loving this person and enjoying what makes them happy. And there's something so beautifully, you know, when we talk about unconditional, something so unconditional, so not self-centered with that. There's like a good selfish with it, because like it pleases you, right, to see her happy. And so there's this joy and deliciousness there. And there's this piece that starts dissolving this ownership mentality I was speaking of earlier, and even the entitlement mentality, which I love you brought to those early attachment needs. Not even attachment needs, the biological needs. Like, I need the mother to keep me alive for the first couple of years. So that still lives in our nervous systems when it's unmet. I guess I'm saying all that because it interests me to see what could be possible when that ownership dissolves and you truly get blissed out watching the person you love just enjoy their life, even without you, even away from you. And so you're teaching us this through the lens of a thruple, an expanded relationship, which I love that term, yet we can do this with people who have died, people who have left us, people who have cheated on us. Like, there are so many ways to kind of learn, how can I see this person's need and take me out of it so I can witness it? Doesn't mean I have to like it, but it's a different form of witnessing and experiencing, isn't it, than being kind of confined by the story of something's wrong with me, that they feel this way about somebody else or something else.
Oh, I mean, 100%. And I even think before that, really practically, an individual who more consistently than not has space in their life and their relationships for their needs, for their desires, shows up differently within the relationship. And just an example, and again, I know this isn't going to land for everyone because I'm going to describe it in the context of the three of us. And so obviously, clearly, like I said, there's separate relationships and a together relationship. And early on, I had a lot of insecurity and jealousy when I would watch, observe, or catch wind or notice the connection that they were, that Lolly and Jenna were developing together. And what I'd come to realize, right? So them being in their full self-expression, having space to have their needs honored and met, whether it was with me or with the other, what I had noticed observing this over time is that as their connection grew and became more safe and more secure, the version I got of both Lolly and Jenna separately and together was much more grounded and at peace and fulfilled and actualized. And then, like a domino, right, our dynamic shifted and changed.
Yeah.
So again, it just kind of, even before, right, kind of this idea of expanding and what that can allow, I think just like really kind of logistically, you do feel palpably the shift in someone when, regardless of if you had played the role in their need being met or they did on their own or someone else had a hand in it, the person then that you are going to be present to or in interaction or dynamic with will feel different because they will be in that more grounded state of presence because they will have had space to express themselves and their needs.
I mean, even when you say that, because you say this won't land for everybody, but it's still a powerful teaching for that everyone can apply. You know, you can have the story of, you know, my husband watches TV for an extra hour and I'd rather he be in bed with me. What if you loved how much he loves watching TV for that hour? It's like something he's doing with his time. What would it be like to love that and see what kind of man comes to you after that when you've given him that time? One example of, you know, a million we could come up with.
Exactly.
But there's a thing you said that interests me when you said doesn't land for everybody. What was it like to come out publicly? And you still have millions and millions of people that continue to follow your work. So it didn't hurt you in that way. But what was that like? How did you experience the reception?
So the decision to even come out publicly was grounded in really the entirety of the conversation and the work, which is, as that became my reality that I was living, I started to see all of these moments where I was more out of flow than in flow. Because I was starting to have kind of that little sensor in my mind again when I would be speaking on podcasts or even working with Jenna within our community, Self Healer Circle, right? And I would instinctually want to just use a real life example as I often teach from. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to edit this out or edit that out. So the decision was made because I did know that what I was coming out with was a more untraditional relationship. And I did have an instinct or an idea that it wasn't going to be fully welcomed in terms of reception. So the decision, though, to be in my authentic truth outweighed the fear and the concern. It was, if I'm being honest, one of my, if not the most unfollowed days. Not that I really look at that, but I've had some doozies. But that day was one of the most unfollowed days in my Instagram history. Yeah. So there was the reaction that I anticipated. And on the other side of it, there was such support, whether or not it was individuals that were exploring and expanding their own relationships that were feeling seen, or just individuals who were seeing, right, the authenticity in this disclosure, right, and were getting something from that. So what it felt like for me was a relief, right? It felt like now that sensor, that worry, either based on me saying the wrong thing and, you know, kind of disclosing it when I didn't mean it, even the worry about what would people think, because it's already
out there. Absolutely.
Was gone. So what I had access now to was a return, if you will, to that sense of ease, where I could just be as I am and you know, having had practice and continuing to learn how to tolerate everyone's opinion about what it is that I'm sharing just continues to strengthen my ability to speak my truth regardless of what will be on the receiving end of it.
So what you just said is important to me because I wrote this down yesterday and I wrote it down today when you were talking, and I call it rupture, you know, when something happens within a relationship, like that thing breaks and you feel the trigger and you feel like you're losing somebody or they hate you or there's this social or emotional rupture. There's something you said earlier about security and trust really emerging when you know you can rupture and navigate it with your partner. So you're not avoiding rupture, which causes all this isolation and distance, but you're able to dive into it with each other and kind of like hold each other and hold space for each other to be apart while you're dealing with it until you get to a place where there's capacity. And you're talking about that situation with your public. It was a rupture, you know, a lot of unfollows, people saying nasty things about you, whatever happens publicly. And you moved through it, which creates more resilience and safety in your body to be more of yourself. I'm just curious if you can touch on rupture relationally and how, I even love how you broaden the humanity, your own humanity. You're at the end of the 6-month tour, your resources are low. And so you're not going to be able to bring yourself the way you would to your relationships because you don't have the capacity. That humanizes this experience of rupture is inevitable. You don't hit the safe relationship just coast. It's an endless kind of up and down. So just tell us about navigating rupture and how it creates more intimacy when you can actually expect it and hold it rather than avoid it or judge it.
That shift into even the awareness that it is something that can be accepted. Because based on our learning, our earliest relationships, I think, again, very few of us have had modeled safe, responsible navigation of conflict or of those moments of rupture. We've been on the other side of a lived experience, which was the opposite, where those moments met either explosive, sometimes even abusive, violating actions, or met disconnection. And again, in childhood, in that state of dependency, that disconnection is perceived as a threat. And so having lived the experience of emotional disconnection, of my mom using the silent treatment when she herself was under-resourced and in a shutdown state of her nervous system, unable to even re-engage with me or repair after the rupture, for me, I had that learning that rupture conflict is to be avoided. It is dangerous. It means you've done something wrong and you've lost the love and connection and security and comfort that you need, the relationship. And inevitably, it means that the relationship is wrong. Is it meant to be? So understanding, again, I think relearning even just logically what rupture is, it's natural, it's inevitable. Disagreement, disconnection, even sometimes dysregulating moments of heightened reactivity are a natural byproduct of trying to navigate life with unique, different other people, right? So for many of us, we have to teach ourselves not only how to be in conflict, those moments where we are dysregulated without overstepping boundaries or causing harm to the relationship. And then we also similarly have to learn how to engage in the reconnection afterward. And so for me, the more I've done that, I love how you've just expanded my focus that that's what happened with my community online too. So I have had to teach myself how to navigate conflict in a grounded way, how to hold space and be curious about someone else's differing opinion or perspective, how to reconnect afterward. And having now done that consistently in the closest relationships I have that sense of security. Now I can tolerate a bit more space. I don't immediately take it to mean I've been bad and I need rectify it at all cost, right? And so the unlearning and the relearning, I think, of what conflict is, what it means, how to navigate it, how to reconnect after it. And that begins with us first developing that secure connection within ourselves. And the more we do that, I, again, appreciate you expanding my focus because I do believe to some extent it strengthened my connection and my community's connection with me, right? Because there was a rupture. And then they saw how not only did I navigate it, it's been very interesting to see too. Every now and again, I'll have a community member pop back in after having had a rupture with me, sometimes even unbeknownst to me, outside of my awareness. And they come back and they're like, wow, Nicole, I have a completely different perception of you. And interestingly, right, I do think it has strengthened the relationship to some extent.
So I would love to ask you some personal questions, like around just being public, because I have to say, when I first found you, I think you had like 400,000 people following you on Instagram. And in my mind, I was like, oh, she can't get any bigger than that. And then it just exploded these last few years. And what's exciting, I have to say, is you represent a lot of us therapists and healers that are very private. Because, I mean, this is the sense I get of you, so I can be wrong, but really private, very real, and just honest. And what drives you to be public is the service. Because I had no interest in having Instagram ever in my, I had a MySpace for like 2 days. That was like the most I ever did. But I have no issue being on Instagram when I'm doing my service. And I see that in you, and it's very, it's very, very inspiring. And it feels like, oh, okay, she's doing it. And this is a true question. How are you doing with all this? Like, how does your body do with this? I'm just so curious how you're living with this.
I appreciate the question and appreciate the kindredness that I'm sensing in even this question. Because if I'm being honest, no part of me wanted to be public, thought I would be public, thought I could be public. Public speaking. I think I maybe made one presentation. Thank God clinical psychology presentations weren't a part of it. I stuttered through the whole thing. I shook, I sweat, right? I am. And I think even back to childhood, when I say I was severely shy, fearful, wouldn't order my drink at a restaurant, my mom would have to hide behind her leg, right? So again, this deep place of me, because again, I didn't have the security to be myself, to see myself reflected back. All of this, I think, came from really fear of being seen. Mm-hmm. That fear is still palpable. As I got and started to evolve my practice and started to learn all these holistic tools, and as I knew I didn't learn them in school, and as I started to see Instagram and how people were using them, absolutely, it was service. It was, wow, I have this information that for me changed the way I think about the human being, changed the way I want to work with human beings, and is information that, in my opinion, is desperately needed to be spoken publicly. So the decision to go online was based purely in service, and it was a little bit of an exercise in my own healing.
Yes.
Knowing how fearful I was of my authentic truth, let alone being seen by someone outside of myself, let alone a public group of individuals on Instagram, I saw it as an opportunity, the account that is, as an opportunity for me to practice, because all I had done otherwise, whether it was my personal relationships or even my professional world, I watered myself down based on what the person wanted or needed of me, or to avoid a particular perception based on what my program told me, how I had to practice, or what the gold standard was. So how am I doing, to get to the question there? That conflict still exists. I am of two minds in many occasions. I am driven and purposeful and passionate about this service and want to talk about this and love these conversations. And then there's a very vulnerable part of me that feels exposed in doing that, that worries like about what people will think as I continue to speak more honestly, to share my maybe evolving theories that might change as I continue to evolve and change myself. So within that conflict, I'm always just trying to, again, keep connected to myself, especially like I was sharing, coming off of promotion in this way where there was live events, where now it's not just a little number.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Of people looking at me, I see their faces, you know,
and physical, like, now. Yeah.
I mean, and it's probably even less people than probably have watched me virtually, but when I'm seeing them and feeling their energy, I mean, I would be lying again if I didn't say that I was a nervous wreck leading up to several of these events, even though I know exactly what I'm saying, all of the moderators,
the
people I was in conversation with, I knew everything, I knew them, I was excited for the conversation, having eyes on me.
Yeah.
Was really activating and still is. So yeah, I'm driven by purpose, though. Again, let's tie all this together. To be in purpose, I have to be in my body. Mm. I have to be caring for my body. I have to be in alignment. I have to be able to access my flow to be able to then serve in the way that I want to.
Yeah. I love that. And I I imagine you were thrown into this, not thrown against your will, but like you chose to do this and then it blew up, but you didn't have someone training you how to do public speaking. Yeah. You just learned over time, your capacity shifted, right? Based on your purpose and essentially like it's your immersion therapy. You kind of threw yourself into this. Now you're just finding your way, aren't you?
I love that. I mean, in every way, the work I now do is an exercise in my capacity.
That's right. That's right. Well, I really want to take this opportunity at the end of the interview just to thank you for the work you do. And thank you for, there's few people that do this work in the world where I can really sense their humanity. I sense their brilliance and their experience and their philosophy, but their humanity. And you have a real gift of letting your humanity be part of what you're doing. It's so generous. And I never feel baited. You know, when I read the work you put out, I never feel baited. I feel like this person is just truly giving me what she knows so we can do something with it. And it's really beautiful. You're using Instagram so beautifully. And I probably wouldn't have kept using it if I didn't find your account, because it really gave me the permission to, okay, I'm going to use it this way too. So thank you. It's really beautiful.
Luis, I'm full body chills at this point. To be seen as you just reflect it back to me really truly just means I've chills still. It really does mean everything, because so much of what I'm about is the service, is I just want this conversation to happen. I just want even this community of people to exist. I mean, when I began the account, for all of the reasons that I just shared, I also began it feeling in desperation, loneliness of so wanting my people. I just wanted people that I could have these conversations with, that were making sometimes what sound like crazy lifestyle choices. Like, I go to bed near 8 p.m. at night. I mean, you know, I'm not always in alignment with the rest of the world. I just wanted to have people where I could feel seen and just normal and okay. So my desire, and the reason why there will always be, you know, the free accessible aspect of the work that I do, whether it's the content or the community, is really to that end, is because I desperately just want these conversations, this information out there. And I know that people are feeling similar as I did. We really just want our people. We need safety. Mm-hmm. We need security. We need community. And I'm just so honored to now be a part of community and connected to individuals much like yourself who do see me. For me, like that moment, those chills for me just represented again, somatically, my body registering that deep need, right? Just to be
absolutely
seen and in resonance with someone else. So thank you for gifting me with that today.
Oh, you're welcome, my love. So how to be the love you seek, everyone listening, you can find it. We have the info in the episode details. Thank you for coming on. I would love to, in the future, have you again, because I want to hear more about your traumas and how they became your wisdom, you know, because I'm always fascinated by that, and it just wasn't time today. But thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you again. And I will look forward to our future conversation.
That's the end of today's episode. Now let's take a moment to notice where we feel the episode in our bodies. Close your eyes. Take a breath. And let whatever wants to come up, come up. And remember, those sensations hold the wisdom that we're looking for. If you want to go deeper, visit holisticlifenavigation.com. Hey everybody, it is time. It is time to hop on a plane, a train, a boat, a goat, a bike, a car, and find your way upstate New York to a little town outside of Phoenicia. I don't know what the town's called, actually. But the place that we're going to be in is called Menla. And it is a gorgeous, epic retreat center in the middle of the forest in the Catskill Mountains, with a spa and organic vegetarian food with lots of beans and yoga in the morning, and a swimming pool and a swimming hole and trails. And yes, it is an HLN retreat. It is a 5-day retreat from Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. It is the biggest retreat we've ever put on, and the entire team is going to be there.
They are all flying from different corners of the country to come together to hold you in the healing magic that is somatics. We will be teaching you how to belong without having to fit in, how to find safety inside of yourself and share that with others, how to receive witnessing, how to feel for your boundaries instead of fawning. We are going to cover so much, and you're going to be doing it in the most ideal setting of being fed, of being loved, of resting, of enjoying the forest and nature, and being with us and 60 other bodies. So please go to the website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click on events, and you'll find it there. Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. All the info as well can be found directly through the link in this episode details. I am just so thrilled for this, and I can't wait to see some of you in person.